In the summer of 1976, the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting was going to be in Norfolk, Virginia that year. It was a long car ride for our family. My mom and dad, my sister and I made that journey. My brother happened to be there because of things he was doing. So our family got to go and be there. It was an interesting journey and ride in that car. And as our family headed to the Atlantic Ocean for the very first time, born in the panhandle of Texas. There's not much water anywhere in the panhandle of Texas. And to see that much water at one time is just amazing. I'm still in awe of that at times. But that summer, it was a rather big deal at the convention that year. It was the year in which our nation was celebrating our bicentennial. It was a big deal. There was a replica of the Liberty Bell that was at the convention in a display. People could go by and see that. President Carter, the most famous Southern Baptist at the time, was to speak at the convention. Just lots of stuff going on. I didn't get to go see him. Security was tight and I was iffy. No, not really. We didn't get to go see him. But my mom and sister and I perhaps went to a couple of sessions. My dad went every day. My sister and I hung out on the beach, and to this day it's still the worst sunburn I've ever had in my life. But we were able to go. One of the sessions to which we attended, though, was the mission celebration session. But if you're going to go to a convention and you're only going to go to a session or two, go to the missions one. It's always exciting. And as we were there seated in the arena of the convention center, I was sitting next to my father, and we were watching as missionaries were coming in, filling up seats on the floor. Of particular interest to our family was a missionary who was going to be there that evening, and I do not remember his first name. His last name is Key. Brother Key was a missionary to Brazil. He was of particular interest to our family because my father at one time had pastored Key Heights Baptist Church in Perryton, Texas, where I was born. Behind our house, across the street, past the house, across the alley, past the house behind us and across that street was a farm field. It was owned by the Key family. And so they were big contributors into that city and that town and important there. And his roots were there. My father spotted him out on the floor. And as best I can remember, my dad gave me a general area and where the missionary Key was sitting. As he sat there, gave me a general area and described him to me so that I could try to identify him. I couldn't. Finally, my father got to the place where he just counted the rows and then counted the seats over to where Brother Key was seated. And I was able to identify him along with my father. My father knew him. He knew exactly what he looked like. But as a young guy, I couldn't quite identify him until I knew those specifics. A number of years later, the roles were reversed. My father and I were seated in the bleachers of the Bowie High School Jackrabbits football field. I don't know why anybody would have jackrabbits as their school mascot. But anyway, we were seated there. It was the first scrimmage of the year. I was a freshman in high school. The JV had already scrimmaged and it was over. And I was seated in the bleachers talking with my dad and probably eating something by that point. And my dad kept saying, "Who is that? Who made that tackle? Who did that?" And the reason he was having to do that, it was at Petrolia High School in scrimmages, they had not yet passed out uniforms. So every guy on the field from Petrolia High School was wearing a white jersey and white pants mixed with North Texas dirt and teenage boy sweat. And everybody looked the same. Well, I've been in 2 days for over 2 weeks at this point with these guys. I knew who they were by the way they walked or what they did. And my dad said, "Who's that?" I would identify the player for him. He knew who they were by name. He just couldn't identify them without a number on their back because during the season he knew the numbers. Being able to identify people is very, very important in our 4x4 challenge. As we think about that and how do we identify people, I want to ask you to turn to John chapter 1, verses 43 to 51. We're going to look at how might we identify people this morning as we look at our text. Well, because followers of Jesus identify people who are not yet followers of Jesus. It's very important for us. Those of us who say, yeah, I'm a follower of Jesus, is that we're going to identify people who are not yet followers of Jesus. Did I not put that on there? No, I didn't. Hang on just a second. I thought I stuck slides on there. I didn't. John chapter 1, if you're going to find it in the Pew Bible, I think it's about page 687. 687, if you want to look in the Pew Bible. He said, the next day he purposed to go, beginning at verse 43, John 1, 43. The next day he purposed to go into Galilee, and he found Philip and said, and Jesus said to him, follow me. Now Philip was from Bethsaida, of the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nathanael said to him, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? Jesus answered and said to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said to him, because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, truly, truly, I say to you, you will see the heavens open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. As we look at this story today, I want us to see what unfolds from it, and then see, well, how does that apply to us? We see that Jesus called Philip to follow him. As the story is unfolding, he encounters Philip and he asks Philip to follow him. Excuse me. And Philip chooses to do so. Philip decides that he's going to follow Jesus. But what I want us to see is, what did Philip do after he did that? Well, Philip identifies Nathanael. Philip identifies Nathanael. Philip, who has chosen to follow Jesus, finds Nathanael, who is not yet a follower of Jesus. Now, we don't know about the relationship. It doesn't tell us about the relationship between Philip and Nathanael. Is it that, you know, Nathanael's just some random guy that Philip spots? I really don't think so. Just through the way the story unfolds, it's quick, it flows quickly. I don't think Philip spots somebody he's never seen before. I think Philip and Nathanael are friends. And Philip and Nathanael have this friendship and this relationship. And because of that, and their brief discussion tells us all of this stuff and what Philip says to him. He says, look, we found the one that Moses told us about. We found the one the prophets have told us about. These two guys, Philip and Nathanael, probably have looked at their scriptures and they have talked about who is this one, and his friend that he cares about. Philip has found Jesus. Jesus found Philip and called him to follow, and Philip responds and says, yeah, I'll follow you. He gets up and goes with him. So now he goes to his friend and says, hey, look, I found him. Hey, I found him. And he identifies Nathanael. And there's some room in their relationship for questions and exploration. Notice Nathanael, when Philip says something to him, notice Nathanael doesn't just jump up and follow. Now, isn't that fun? When you identify somebody who's not a follower of Jesus, you say something to them about Jesus, and they're all in right there from the get-go. They're ready to go. Doesn't happen that way often. We see that there's room in their relationship. Matter of fact, if you read this and you read it out loud, Nathanael sounds sarcastic. He sounds, well, can any good come out of Nazareth? Can't you just hear him saying, Nazareth, that town. Now, you got to understand this. Nazareth is the Rodney Dangerfield. For those of you who are old enough to know that. The rest of you, your parents will explain it to you at lunch. Nazareth just can't get any respect. It's a little bitty place. It's a small town. Nobody anticipates anything really of high caliber to come out of Nazareth. It's just kind of bypassed and overlooked. And we could probably name towns like that. You probably had towns like that around where you grew up. Nobody ever anticipated any good thing to come out of them, all that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of what's happening. This Nazareth, nothing good's going to come out of that. And in this relationship between Philip and Nathanael, Philip says to him, hey, here's the one. Well, Nathanael just doesn't buy in and respond real quickly. Matter of fact, there's a sarcasm to him about it and a question, a doubt. Well, as you identify people, there's got to be some room for that. And as we see this story unfold. But Philip has a great response. Philip has a great response. Come and see. Come and see. He doesn't try to answer everything. He doesn't have a response for everything. He invites him into a journey. Well, why don't you come and see for yourself? You come and see and find out. He didn't get bothered that it doesn't show that Nathanael's asking a question. He doesn't get bothered that that Nathanael doesn't just accept everything that he has said, that he's sarcastic, that he's challenging him. Instead, he invites him into this journey of discovery to come and see. Well, what Nathanael discovers is that Jesus already knew him. Jesus already knew him. And that he could ask Jesus questions. Jesus sees him when he's coming. He speaks about him. And Nathanael wants to know, well, how'd you know me? And he says to Nathanael, well, I saw you under the fig tree. Now, this is kind of one of those things where John gives us this image that of Jesus even as all God and all man, but he's limited himself here on earth. But yet, that all God part comes out and he identifies and he knows him and he sees him and he reveals some of that about Jesus. But Jesus already knew him. How did you know that? And he relates to Jesus in the midst of this. Jesus saying, well, look, here it was. And I saw you. Jesus letting him know, hey, I know who you are. But out of that then, Nathanael responds. Nathanael has belief. Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are this one we've been looking for. You are the King of Israel. And he identifies, and Nathanael believed. Nathanael responds. Nathanael believes in him and believes on him. And then what we find happening is that Jesus invited him into a relationship of discovery. For he says, you know, believing is the beginning. Jesus says to him, hey, look, this, you believe this and you see this, you're going to experience even more as you follow me. You're going to come across even more. There's going to be even more for you down the road. And so that's what he wants him to see. And we see this story unfold. But what do we do with this story? As we look at this story, as we're thinking about the 4x4 challenge, as we unfold it for you, teach it to you so that you know, well, what does this mean for us? In the first, you know, there's three other pegs over there, three other sets of pegs. So we've got three more words to go. The first word is to identify. We want to be able to identify potential followers of Jesus. And the challenge is, you want to guess how many? Four. Very good. Thank you. 4x4. There, you know, the challenge is for you to identify four potential followers of Jesus. Philip chose to follow Jesus, and what he did in response to that was he went and identified Nathanael as a potential follower of Jesus. In 4x4, we want to identify four potential followers of Jesus. Now, let me say this about this. That the point behind this is we work on this together as a church, is that you're going to identify four people that are going to be consistently in your area of influence, and people that when you get to the place that you're inviting them to church, you've built that relationship, you've gotten far enough along with them that you want to invite them to come to church and Sunday school with you, they can actually be physically close enough to do that. Because you may be thinking, well, I've got family members that don't know Jesus, but they're not really in your area of influence. on a consistent basis. They're not located anywhere near around here. So I'm going to say this to you. You pray for those folks, and when you have opportunity to witness to them and talk with them, you do that. But they're not a part of your four, okay? They're in your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Anyway, so you want to do that, and certainly you want to pray for those folks in your family. I have folks like that that I'm concerned about, but they're not in my area of influence. I don't see them on a regular basis. But you want to identify four people with whom you're going to have somewhat regular and consistent contact, because it's a process. And as the other three things unfold, we talk about those in the coming weeks, you'll see and understand even more about that, about why they need to be people that you're going to come across regularly, that you can have a relationship with them, that you can invest in their lives, and you get to know them and they get to know you. So they've got to be four people somewhere around here. Now, the other thing I will say to you about that is as you build a relationship with them, you get to know them, they may be one of your four. Well, some things could change, and maybe something happens and they end up out of your realm of influence. That's okay. That's okay. That may happen. They may move out of your realm of influence. And you're going to keep them on your list. You're going to keep praying for them. But somebody else may move up into that top four. Okay? Now, if it sounds really confusing, I'm going to try to make it clear and clearer than mud. But we'll try. For instance, I know who those four are. And some of mine are couples. I know this couples on either side of our house. Well, name them all one at a time. I get four in a hurry. But we're going to work on them together and pray for them together. So I've got these. But I've had men during baseball season that I got to know from Tanner's baseball team. And I was praying for those men and praying for open doors and opportunities to build relationship. And baseball season ended, and I didn't get very far. Right? Maybe a little bit, but I didn't get very far. Well, football season has started. There's a new group of men, and some of those guys I'm praying for. God's put them on my heart. I don't know how far we'll get between now and the end of football season. So I want to tell you something I think is really important. As you identify these four, and I'm praying for these four people, and, and a couple of months down the road, all of a sudden you discover one of those people has moved. Or they got transferred, their department at work got transferred, and you don't see them anymore. Those kinds of things. Here's something all of us need to understand. Oh, that didn't come out right. Don't you love it when you do that? Anyway, those were all supposed to be on one line. Oh well. PowerPoint is not my greatest thing in the world, but I'm learning. But anyway, that was supposed to be one line. So what I want you to see is I want you to see a progression about people coming to Jesus. On the left end is that didn't come out at all. It's totally lost. Totally lost on the left end. On the right end, not only are they born, they're born again. Okay? That's the way it's supposed to be. And those are 10 dots, and they were all supposed to be on one line. So somewhere the gremlins got in the computer and messed it up. But anyway. Somebody's moving along, and it's a process. Now, the thing is sometimes we have this thought that, hey, I've got to get this person who's totally lost. They've never been to church. Nobody's ever told them about Jesus. And in one moment in time, I've got to move them from there all the way over to born again. It seldom works that way. So let's not put that much pressure on ourselves. Okay? Now, this is not original with me. I stole it from other people. Your responsibility is maybe they're not totally lost. Maybe they've heard some things, but they're about step three in the process. If God can use you to help move them from step three to step four, awesome. Awesome. That's just incredible. Now, here's the thing is, you may help move them from step three to step four, and before you can help get them from four to five, for some reason or another, they're out of your realm of influence. I don't want you to feel defeated. I don't want you to feel like you have failed. You have not. You have helped move them one step closer to getting to be at the place where they're going to trust Jesus Christ as their Savior. Now, it is incredible when you are at point 9 and you move them to point 10 and they finally get it and they say, I give. I want to give my life to Jesus. I want Jesus to be my Savior. That's really fun. But you know what? And if you're at point 9 and you help get to move them along to point 10 and you met them and they were at point 9, you've got to realize there may have been 9 people in front of you who helped move them along. And every one of you has a significant role to play in helping move this person along to Jesus Christ. Okay? So wherever they are, you're going to do this, and you're going to have 4 people, and you're going to identify 4 people. And I'm already anticipating, as I'm thinking about some men I've gotten to know through football with Tanner, as I think about these men, I pray for them. And I anticipate maybe there's an open door of opportunity to talk to them about their faith or to invest in their life or to help them learn something. As I do that, I realize when football season is over, those men may move out of my realm of influence. Matter of fact, I may not see them unless I bump into them in a store or at a ball game or something like that. And they've moved out of my realm of influence. Is there an opportunity for God to use me to move them a step along? I hope so. If nothing else, maybe it is they have a good experience with somebody who calls himself a Christ follower. And they've not had many of those. Maybe they've had none of those. I don't know. But I can move them a step along somewhere along the way. That's what you want to be doing. Now, the hope is you get to move them a step along and you stay with them and you hang with them and they hang with you and you just keep on and you have this relationship with them. And ultimately, you get to see them come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior. And that's cool. We want to see that happen. But we've got to be identifying at least 4 potential followers of Jesus. We want to be able to do that. Also, you want to allow people that you're building relationships with the opportunity to ask questions and to explore about Jesus. What does it mean to be a Christ follower? What does it mean to have a relationship with Jesus? Who is this Jesus guy? What is it that he did for me? You know, it's really nice when we're talking to somebody about Jesus and we tell them some things and we tell them biblical truth and they say yes and accept it. That's wonderful. It's not always realistic. Sometimes they have questions. Sometimes they have challenges. And they're going to say, well, what about oh so-and-so? And it's going to be the worst Christian they can find. Trust me, it'll be the worst example they've ever experienced. Well, so-and-so. Well, you know, yeah, that happens. So-and-so. Is we've got to give them some freedom to ask questions and to explore and for us to not get frustrated and upset with them. It's nice when they accept it all and move along, but that's not always realistic. That doesn't always happen that way. But I also want you to know this. You don't have to have the perfect answer. You don't have to have the perfect answer. I've got 3 theology degrees. I don't always have the perfect answer. I'm not a debater, so if somebody wants to try to start debating, I can get, you know, frustrated and flustered, and I won't have the right words either. But that doesn't mean I can't have an impact. That doesn't mean they can't ask questions, and I can try to give them thoughtful answers and tell them, look, let me discover more about that, and I'll give you a better answer later. Okay? So you want to be, it's okay for them to ask questions and explore. Because we want them to come to the place where they're going to know Jesus and they're going to believe and they're going to buy in because, yeah, Jesus has done this. I've asked the questions. The answers have been there. But a lot of it is they just need to see your life. So you can have the same answer. Come and see. Come and see. You might invite them to a Bible study. Say, hey, what if we study the Bible together? What if we do something like that? Hey, come to a worship service with me. Hey, if you got questions, ask them. I'll try to answer them the best I can. If I don't know the answer, we'll go find somebody who does. But build a relationship with them. And build a relationship with them that lets them know you care about them even if they're not buying what you're selling. Okay? Have a relationship with them that even though you believe in Jesus and you would like for them to believe in Jesus, but just because they're not ready to sign on the dotted line today, it's okay. You still care about them. And you're going to have a relationship with them. And as you do that and you keep caring about them and you keep showing up in their life, that'll mean a lot. But you're going to invite them to come and see. Hang in there with me. Come, see. Let's experience some of this together and you'll see what I'm talking about. So we want to do those things as well. While you're at it, ask Jesus to reveal himself to them. See, that's what happened. That's what Jesus did with Nathanael. Jesus convinced Nathanael that Jesus knew who he was. That he knew about his life. He knew what was going on in his life. And Jesus convinced Nathanael. We have to trust Jesus to convince people. You know, you and I can only do so much. We only have so many words. We only have so much persuasion. But we do have prayer and we have Jesus. And we can trust Jesus to convince people that he knows them, that he loves them, that he cares about them, that he took all of these steps for their benefit and for their blessing in their lives. So we can trust Jesus to do that. And we simply need to trust Jesus to be at work in their life. Now, you've got to realize this. Jesus wants to work through your life. Jesus wants to use you. Whether you're you sitting over here and you got a look on your face like, well, I'm not real. This really sounds, Pastor, like you're talking to all the adults. I'm not. It's for all of us. All of us can do that. Matter of fact, by the way, students, you are in one of the biggest mission fields in the world on a daily basis during the school year. Especially in a public school. And I played private school kids when I was in high school. They're not all believers either, if the way they act on the football field will tell you anything. So just so you'll know. But you're going to ask Jesus to reveal himself to your friends that you're praying for. Don't you think Jesus can do that? Don't you think Jesus wants to do that? That Jesus wants those folks to know him? He does. He's going to use you. He's going to use you. We unfold all of 4x4 and you know about it and you start putting it to work in your life and you're practicing it and you're identifying people and you're praying for them and all those things. You know, it's going to be really fun. It's when you come in someday and say, Pastor, let me tell you about my friend this week. Hey, Pastor, let me tell you about my friend this week. Ask Jesus to reveal himself to them. Believe that your friend's going to believe. Believe that your friend will believe. There's a story that I've heard before, but it was of the man who basically did, nobody called it 4x4 then, but a man who basically did what we're going to talk about in 4x4, and he had some friends that he had, some relationships he had with some men. And God burdened his heart to begin to pray for his friends, that they would become followers of Jesus. He was, and he loved Jesus, and he wanted these men in his life to know Jesus. And so he started praying for men. As best I recall, there were three men. One of them, in just a few weeks, gave his life to Christ and began to follow Jesus. And he was really excited about that. And the second friend, a few months down the road, finally gave his life to Jesus. The third friend he had to pray for over 3 decades. Took a long time. But he kept on. And his statement was, well, what if I'd given up somewhere along the way? What if I had stopped somewhere along the way? This friend never went out of his realm of influence. His friend was there consistently and constantly. And his friend resisted for a long time. They could have talks about Jesus, all of those things, but he just wouldn't give his life to Christ. But over 3 decades later, finally, the first friend took a few weeks. The last friend took over 30 years. I don't know where it's going to be for your friends, But you've got to believe that Jesus is going to get your friends. Jesus is going to catch them. Jesus is going to convince them. And Jesus is going to use you. Some pastor developed 4x4. It developed as pastor and staff, along with staff spouses, all went on to a conference together and a time away together. And they were struggling at their church because their church had been reaching lots of people and it had kind of stalled. And in the course of a year, as they were driving along, the youth minister said, Pastor, do you realize nearly everybody our church has reached and baptized in the last year, you reached them? How do you do that? Well, I'll tell you this is, I would guess there would be a lot of pastors who wouldn't put it in all of this terminology that we're going to have in 4x4, but pastors who have a heart for trying to reach people are going to tell you pretty much the same things that we're going to tell you in here. And when I read it, I'm like, yeah, I've been doing that for years. Not as intentionally focused, not as deliberately as I should have been or need to be. But it's the same thing as finding people and building relationships with them, and some of them are folks, I will tell you, I don't know whether they've ever come to know Jesus Christ or not, because either they moved or I moved. And they were no longer in my realm of influence, but maybe I moved them a step in the process, or a couple of steps in the process. But I also believe, if we have a heart for people who are not yet followers of Jesus, and we identify at least four of them, you may not see all of them come to know Jesus, but I believe our Lord wants to see you get to be a part of the harvest. And that if you'll be deliberate and faithful in identifying four people, and you're going to pray for them, and you're going to build relationships with them, and you're going to talk to them about Jesus, and we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. But if you'll identify four people, I believe Jesus is going to allow you to see some of them come to know Him. But if you're a follower of Jesus, the challenge is, will you commit to identify four people who are not yet followers of Jesus? Maybe you're not sure who those four people are. Maybe you're right now you're going, well, I can come up with one. I don't think I have four. Would you pray about who are those four people? Ask Jesus to show you who the four people ought to be in your life. To begin to do that. By next Sunday, and you're in Sunday school, if not, they'll be in worship as well. If you're not in Sunday school, I encourage you to be in Sunday school. It's an important part of who we are as a church and what we do. But in our Sunday school classes, we're talking about this. There will be a 4x4 card with a place for at least four names on it for the four people you identify. I want to challenge you this week to be praying about who are those four people, and that by next Sunday, you can name four people. And you may be thinking, you know, Pastor, I've got this friend that I know. I don't really know where they are spiritually. They might actually be a believer, Pastor, but I don't know. Well, you know what? It's good to find out. It's okay to put their name on the list and pray for them. Because some of those people on my list, I don't know either. They may not be believers, but they might be. But it's better to put them on the list and pray for them and find out and discover. Because if you can't tell, and they actually are, it may be they're not doing a real good job of following Jesus, and they need some encouragement in that realm, and God can use you in that realm. That's a great ministry. That's a great part of it. Because some of those people, you may discover, hey, they really are a follower of Jesus. I've just never been able to talk to them about it. Because work doesn't allow that, or whatever the case may be. But my challenge to you today is, will you make a commitment? I'm going to have four people I can pray for. And during this next week, here's your assignment for this next week, that you'll be asking Jesus, who are my four supposed to be? And next Sunday, we'll have 4x4 cards, and you'll be ready to write some names on those 4x4 cards. You're not going to turn those cards in, you're going to keep them. Because you'll want to keep up with who those four people are. You're going to hang on to those 4x4 cards. But that's your assignment for this week. School's in session. You got homework. Your homework for the next week is pray about who your four are and can you have four names. Now I'm gonna say this preventative word by next week. And in case you're going, well, next Sunday you get here and you think, well, I've only got two names. Well, start with the two you have. And trust the Lord's going to bring you two more. Would you do that? Four people. Well, Pastor, that sounds like a lot. Yeah, I know. Remember, I moved to town. The only people I knew were y'all. And y'all show up here. I'm assuming you're a believer. And then I show up here to work during the week. And a big chunk of the time, the only person I see is me. But the Lord's beginning to give me people. The Lord can give you people. Four people. Four. Will you do that?